All right, we are back. We're back, our dear listeners, for a very special episode. We have returned from break, and we're here to bless y'all's ears once again.
Yes, we are back. We are doing our Andor season two reviews. I believe this is the final season, if correct.
Yep.
So essentially, the story should go into Rogue One. But with that, we're going to do weekly reviews of this. I believe they're breaking down. They broke it down into four chapters, so three episodes per chapter. So we're going to do four total reviews of Andor season two. At some point, we're going to do a mid-season finale, and then finale recap of The Last of Us. Oh, Lord have mercy if you watch the last episode. I also don't know where they're going to end on The Last of Us, because if it ends where it ends on the video game, people are going to be really, really mad. And they already confirmed season three, so I don't know how they're going to handle that. And then we are returning officially season five with our review of the movie Thunderbolts. So we also have our special guests on, Jamie, Sword of the Sept Jedi, our resident senior Star Wars correspondent.
Did you want me to just say Sword of the Sith? Is that what I just heard there?
I was about to say Sword of the Jedi. So
that's even worse.
It's a
faux pas, if you will.
I'd rather be the Sword of the Sith, you know what I'm saying?
But I'm Demetrius.
And I'm Demetrius.
And Demetrius presents
the Blurred City Podcast.
All right, so we are jumping directly into it. If you've been with us before, you kind of know how our episode recaps kind of go for TV shows. It's slightly different from when we do movie reviews, but just to kind of recap it for new listeners, for the first episodes, we always start with the what you need to know. So what you need to know going into a season or just a new TV show, kind of backstory, lore, other kind of acting or anything that's like should be pertinent to the show. Then we have the pulse of the people, just a general view of how people feel about the episodes that come out that corresponding week. Do a very brief recap, which we will try. From there, we go to the biggest moments, who and what people we need to know in the recaps. And then we also either give the MVP or the op of the week. Then going from there, we have our big questions of the week, followed by predictions for next week and the big picture view overall. So with that, Meech and Jamie, since y'all both are the Star Wars heads, what do we need to know going into season two of Andor?
Well, I think overall the big things are we're in season two now. So obviously there's the context of season one. There's also the context of Rogue One that comes at the end of this. Like Meech kind of mentioned earlier, we know that since this has been announced as the final season, the very beginning of the first episode, we know this is set a year later after the first season. They give us actually BBY4. So we are 4 years before the events of Rogue One and the events of A New Hope by that timestamp. And so we're kind of set in that frame. Also, additionally, this isn't super relevant immediately to the story, but that means like Star Wars Rebels is probably currently actively starting to take shape as well, because that's kind of around the same time. Just kind of fun other nerd Star Wars things. If it's BBY4, that means Luke and Leia are currently 15 years old. It's been 15 years since the Rise of the Empire, since Order 66, since Anakin fell to the dark side, since Padme died, all that jazz. That's kind of where we are in the wider scope of the Star Wars universe. So what you need to know from the first season, we obviously have some of our major players back. We have Cassian Andor, titular character, also going to be one of the main characters rolling into Rogue One, which also means that we know he has to survive at least until Rogue One, because he's one of the major players in that movie. We've got Luthen, who's back. We've got Mon Mothma, who's a major leader in the rebellion, who's back. We've got some other Chandrillans running around, like her family. We've got Tae Koma and kind of some bankers, Davos Golden running around. We've got Bix. We've got Will. We've got Brazo, all friends of Cassian from Ferrix that escaped at the very end of the last season. We've got Dedra and Cyril. Oh, Cyril, Cyril. Still can't stand it. We'll get to that. So all those guys are running around. Those are our major players that are back from the last season. And we're going to follow. They kind of each have independent storylines moving into this like opening of the first season. So those are the major stories that we're following. In addition to that, you know what? There was something I thought of and then I lost the thought. So Meech, why don't you go ahead and take over? And if it comes back, I'll stick it back in there.
I mean, you pretty much took care of like all you really need to know going into this. Just know that it hits the ground running and you will be absolutely blown away.
Yes. I think the other thing I was going to say, it's interesting that we jump a year later. The last thing that we see in the finale of season one is Marva dies. So we have Cassian's mom dies. We have her funeral procession that basically turns into some sort of mini rebellion on Ferrix, as Marva has this impassioned speech about how if I was to do it all over again, I'd fight them. I'd fight them early, and everyone has to stand up to Empire and fight. And so it impassions all the people who are listening. And then there's this big explosion of a basically confrontation on Ferrix. And that's kind of where everyone disperses from at the end. So that's the final thing we saw happen in the last season. And now we're picking up a year later and we don't really quite know yet what's happened in between.
All right. So with that, we go to the pulse of the people. I try to avoid too many like potential reviews just so I don't, it kind of affect me as we go into our reviews. But what have you kind of, people have been hearing, feeling about how people feel about Andor start of season two so far?
All right. So from what I've heard, there have been a lot of people who definitely loved season one, and they came into this very expecting for it to continue on that gravy train. And in fact, it sure did. A lot of people are they do like these first three episodes. There's also been some controversy just over a couple of subject matters that definitely make their way into this, which you'll definitely see, especially as we talk about one of the storylines. And, you know, people talking like, oh, yeah, this is starting to get too adult for Star Wars, too adult for a franchise meant for kids. And some people think like, oh, it's actually perfectly in line with it because of the fact that, hey, it's starting to it's growing up with the people. And then also at the same time, other people are thinking like, oh, this is starting to become too woke. So too woke and too political. So, yeah, that's what I've seen.
Star Wars is inherently political.
Yeah. You took the words out of my mouth. I'll come back to that comment that I was going to say. But I mean, in terms of general populace, I feel like we're recording this too soon after it coming out for me to have had conversations with actual people. But all the reviews that I've seen, not that I've read them in detail, but I mean, it seems like so far this season of critics that have seen it in advance are rating it pretty good on things like Rotten Tomatoes. There's quotes saying that it's some of the best television that's and storytelling that's been written. Now, granted, of course, you know, film companies, when they release things, always kind of cherry pick their reviews and interviews. But those are some quotes that have been out there. So this has definitely been a very built up, very expectant series that we're coming into with this next season. And yes, per kind of Meech's previous comment, I feel like this maybe could even get stuck in the What You Need to Know segment. Star Wars has always been political. It always will be political. And so I think that, you know, there's some really relevant content that is happening even just in these first few episodes. And I'm excited to see how it shapes up.
All right, so we're going to jump right into the recap. Again, we have three episodes we have to go through. But for that, we have 1 year later, Saugrown and Atima, and then Harvest. So with this, how we're going to break it down, we're going to follow each plot point from episode one to episode three, just so we're not bouncing around. So we're going to cover episode one through three and each kind of plot point that we do discuss. So with that, we're going to kick off with Cassian stealing a fighter. So let's kick it off.
Yep.
Yeah.
So definitely with the first episode, we have with Cassian's storyline. You know, it starts on Senar Test Facility 73. He's basically infiltrated as a Imperial test pilot, wanting to pilot the prototype TIE Avenger, which was actually the TIE 80 starfighter from Legends. But he manages to talk with one of the engineers. Her name's Naya. I don't know how you pronounce it, but she convinces, basically, like, they have a conversation essentially like how she's like, hey, she gave him everything needed. But she, like, she's very nervous, you know, it's like, hey, what if I get caught? She's scared because she's had fun at the testing facility and she's afraid of change. She's afraid of dying. But he's like comforting her. It's like, hey, all you've done, like all your courage, it's keeping you awake now. And it's like, yeah. And she's like, hey, will the rebellion be worth it? Will my death be worth it? And he's like, yeah, it would. after that, we get to the part where he tries to fly it, but unfortunately, he don't know how to fly that thing and is crashing about everywhere. Of course, stormtroopers and a range trooper decides to pull up, nearly blow him to sky high, but fortunately, he manages to figure everything out, escapes the planet, and unfortunately, because of the fact that he couldn't fly, he decides to go off to another planet to a drop-off point to meet up with Porco, where he gets ambushed by a bunch of other rebels, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of other rebels who are pretty much stranded. Turns out they're part of the Maya Pay Brigade, which was mentioned by Saw Gerrera. So essentially, like, they're like, hey, he's actually an Imperial. Let's go ahead. Let's get this ship. Let's figure out how to fly it. Their main pilot, Rika, she can't figure it out because it's a prototype. Come on now.
It's a Cybertruck.
Man. Don't even get me started. So.
No.
But yes, but all that aside, there's been major bickering going on between the two like leads of the rebellion cell.
Their leader left for some reason.
No. First, their initial leader,
got killed. Oh,
supposedly. There's debate over whether she's actually dead. We don't really know. Nobody's in charge. It's chaos. These guys are incompetent. One of their brothers
like he decided to like take charge, but then he left and supposedly go find survivors, and everything's all pandemonium. Folks is like, Cassian is like, he's planting seeds of doubt in people, and with a little bit of extra nudging and instigation, Hall of Fame, he causes the two groups to eventually like have a mini civil war right then and there. He gets taken by one group that goes to one of Cassian's like old ships, while the other group is with the new ship, and they're at a stalemate because like, oh yeah, the Cassian crew, we got the food and the pilot, but y'all got the ship, and then it starts becoming a whole affair of them trying to kill each other, before it eventually ends with a game of rock paper scissors. Space rock.
It almost seems like it's more like rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock, honestly, is more what it looks like. But, you know.
it's basically the same thing, but.
I have a question. This wouldn't be the big question, but I'm going to do it now before I forget.
Okay.
Are y'all playing rock, paper, scissors for your lives? Because I'm not doing it.
That is crazy. As crazy levels of. Man, I am not playing that. No, I'm not
sure. But here's the thing. It really tracks with the maturity level of these characters as we have met. Like, I just... when we say they're incompetent, like, you know what? It tracks. It tracks that that's how they would solve their problems.
That's fair.
And he manages to take the... He manages to escape them with the help of a beast. Manages to get onto a ship and fly off, and it turns out the planet he was on was good old Yavin 4, which for me raises a bunch of questions because of the fact, like, hey, if it's Yavin 4 during 4 BBY, shouldn't it be the hub of the rebellion, or like a parsh, or like somewhere in that case?
Well, the thing is, we know that it is by the time of Rogue One, but when does it happen? We don't know. We just know we're on Yavin 4.
Or if even that is like, hey, if it is a hub, or it's certainly becoming established, why couldn't those people just walk a few clicks to the base? I guess because idiots. So they got what they deserved. And then it's just him being like on the ship, and he's swirling around in space. He did some things, and then he ends up hearing about a certain thing that's happening on a planet of his, which will lead us into the next storyline.
Yes. So the next storyline that we have introduced and that will follow is a storyline of Bix, Brazo, and Will, which are the three compatriots of Cassian that escaped from Ferrix when this like rebellion situation was exploding at Marva's funeral. So when we first meet these characters during this show, and B, of course, the droid is with them also, we see they're in this sort of temporary housing situation in the middle of some wheat fields. And then it turns out that they are essentially, they're called toolies is what they call themselves. They're essentially migrant workers is what they're kind of functioning
undocumented.
As.
Undocumented.
So, Yes, they're undocumented, which, well, undocumented asylum-seeking migrant workers is essentially what they are, because we know that they were hunted by the Empire on Ferrix, which, so that literally meets the definition of an asylum seeker as them being present in this capacity that they're in. They're also migrant workers because they're moving around in the fields. They're helping to just help the equipment for the harvesters. And then right from the beginning, we know that Bix is super concerned about their visa situation. There's just kind of a lot of really, again, we said Star Wars was political. It always will be political. So there's a lot of those implications going on in their story right now because they are on the run from the Empire. And so anyway, so we have them dealing with all this farming stuff. There's some interesting relationships with kind of the local characters, because you have Talia, who's a local, who very much seems to be the female friend of Brazzo. There definitely seems to be some sort of relationship that's going on there that we kind of see at the beginning. And then you have Will, that's like, there's this Kellen and his wife's name that I don't know that I ever really caught, but she's not super friendly to Bix and Will and Brazzo and the kind of other people like them, but their daughter and Will sort of have this thing. And so you've kind of got like, Will's got a thing going on, Brazzo's got a thing going on, and then Bix is just kind of hanging out, worried about the visa situation. And Will, of course, Will and the daughter of this farmer are like, oh, they obviously are super interested in each other, but like the daughter's like, my mom really doesn't approve, and it doesn't even matter what my dad says to her because she just doesn't approve. And so clearly there's some issues about the fact that like they are in the situation that they're in that mom doesn't like. But anyway, so what, there's this one day where she comes out to meet Will in the fields to kind of bring the water since they're working. And then suddenly this Imperial ship shows up and they're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Sounds like it hasn't happened in almost a decade. I think it's been about 8 years since some kind of Imperial inspection showed up. But turns out that's exactly what's happening. There's an Imperial inspection. And so communications going in and out of the planet get shut down. And then basically all these Imperial troops kind of start doing sweeps of all the different farm blocks. And so Bix, again, starts getting really worried because she's like, our visa situation, what happens when they come sweep us? What if we get caught? What's going on? And so they are trying to lay low and really just, again, keep their nose to the ground, do the work that they're there to do. While they're waiting for Cashin, who was with them but is off planet, he's supposed to be back from when we meet them, he's supposed to be back the next day, which it kind of seems like each of these episodes constitutes about a day in the timeline. So he should have shown up at around episode 2, but that's not what ends up happening because, as we mentioned before, he gets stuck with these buffoons on the other planet, which again turns out to be Yavin 4. So we've got all these guys kind of running around. They're kind of trying to come up with these solutions. And so the first kind of interesting grating encounter we have that shows up is the Imperial troops show up to Kellen's farm, which is where Bix and Brazzo and Will are hanging out. And there's like the troop kind of comes into his little storehouse while Brasso's in there kind of getting some stuff. But then their lieutenant ends up Nick kind Kroll. Of going out to another part and has a very uncomfortable encounter with Bix, which I want to sidebar on this just shortly for a minute, that this is a very common experience to anyone who lives life in this world as a woman, where you have an uncomfortable encounter with a man who's in some situation of power, and he's trying to exert that power to get what he wants, which we'll revisit this theme, unfortunately, in a little bit. But there's basically, she's clearly uncomfortable, partly because she's worried about her visa situation. But then it turns out that he's sort of trying to flirt with her and then like asks her to go into town with him. And she's like, oh, my husband wouldn't approve. And like, that's kind of the bit that I want to pull out. We find out she's referencing Cashin as the husband, quote unquote. But, you know, whether or not that is actually true, again, I promise you that every woman either has been or has thought of what she would do in this situation of, if my no isn't enough, what can I say to get this guy to leave me alone? And so that's exactly the situation that she's in right now. And so she basically says, oh, I have a husband. Like, I don't think he would like that very much if I like went out with you. And of course, the guard's like, that's too bad. Sorry to hear that or whatever. And anyway, so she kind of, I think Brazzo shows up shortly after that. The lieutenant kind of leaves and then they move forward with the story. And so turns out later when they're all eating, Kellen, they're like kind of trying to figure out what the progression of these blocks is about how these Imperial troops are moving. Kellen, who seems to be friendly to them for most of the story, basically ends up figuring out that they're going to come to essentially the block that Bix and those guys are working on next. They're in trouble, obviously, because they don't have papers. And so they try to get in emergency work order to move them to a different block before the inspections can come and catch them, and that will end up backfiring. Their initial plan is to leave at sundown, but they never make it to sundown because the sweep kind of starts to come their way sooner, and so they're trying to kind of scramble to get all their things together, but then Will runs off to say goodbye to his girlfriend, and they're like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? And then the troops show up there, so he gets pinned down and has to basically run through the fields and kind of leave his feeder there, but then Brasso goes to find him. Turns out he should have just stayed and not gone, but anyway, so Brasso goes, ends up getting caught, essentially blames Kellen for ratting them out. Which is interesting because maybe he did, maybe he didn't. It seems more likely that maybe it was a coincidence of situation, but it's never really, I don't know. To me, it's not really clear if Kellen actually ratted them out or not, but Brasso blames Kellen. He starts to get aggressive, and so then the troops obviously respond by getting aggressive back with him. We flip back to Bix, who is now alone in their pop-out, and our unsavory lieutenant shows up once again and does some more unsavory things, and basically he reveals that he knows that they're illegal. He knows that they don't have papers. And so he tries to make out the situation of like, well, I know that they need, I know that the farmers need help, and I know that you guys aren't documented, but what am I to do? And then tries to force himself on her to get what he wants once again. And she adamantly says no, has to fight him off of her. And then, of course, as the power dynamics of the situation would dictate, because once again, I don't want to gloss over that, any type of situation like this where there's a situation for the possibility of something like sexual assault or rape, it's always a power dynamic that's involved. And so he's trying to assert his power dynamic in this situation. She fights back. One thing I don't love, and again, this is going to be a sidebar, it's really important, I think, to say I don't love that violence against women tends to be a really common storyline in media, not just these days, but over the course of history, because, like, yes, that's real life experience that we're living, but at the same time, I just don't love that it gets used as a plot point so often. However, what I did like about the way that they did it is that Bix didn't need anybody to save her. Bix saved herself. And so, yes, she showed him what's up. She said no. She said, you're not going to have your way with me. She essentially kills him in self-defense. And then the other guy, the other, like, essentially assistant officer that's with this guy, is like, oh, what's going on? He's dead. And she's like, he tried to rape me. Like, this is what's going on. And so then Will kind of shows up right at that minute and then starts shooting at the other guy. But then Bix ends up killing him anyway. So again, she saved herself. So anywho, so Will's back. Bix is there. Now we flash back to Brasso, who again has kind of incited some violence here. But as soon as the first lieutenant comes out, the guy calls back to his other buddies and he's like, hey, we need reinforcements out here. So they sort of leave. There's some that get left with Brasso. The rest go back towards the pod. Brasso, I think, either starts to make a run for it, starts a fight or something. So they start shooting at him. Cassian shows up right about at that point. So he, after refusing to kind of do what Luthen's assistant wanted him to do, he comes back home with the stolen Imperial TIE fighter, right? The prototype. Essentially dive bombs past the blockade into kind of this area where he happens upon Brasso running away from the stormtroopers and starts shooting them all up, and then successfully kind of eliminates that threat, but unfortunately not before Brasso is shot by a stormtrooper. So we see Cass get out to try to go help Brasso. Unfortunately, Brasso is gone, is no longer with us. Cass takes a minute to mourn him while Bix is like, oh my gosh, it has to be Cass. So Bix and Will start running for Cass. We have a short, happy reunion before they all cram back into the TIE fighter and fly away and escape. And that's kind of the wrap on that storyline.
All right. So before we... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, before we go into, like, the next one and a half storylines. Anything major that talking points that you two have of the first two? I had 2 points where one, kind of just like with the rebellion, it's really interesting how they showed how split and divided that group was that they came across, because usually in Star Wars, when we see like friction in the rebellion, it's usually about a plan. And it's like one person is like, oh, we need to, whatever the MacGuffin is, like we need to go in and destroy something or steal something. And then someone else that's like the straight leader is like, no, we need to do this by the book, even though, you know, people are hungry, yada, yada, yada. And then you see that friction. But you see here where it's like they kept asking Cassian, who are you with? Who are you with? Like, that was like a plot point throughout the two episodes that they existed. And then the other plot point kind of is more with the Ferrix people, where it's like with Star Wars. What's so good about Andor is that it shows that evil itself isn't necessarily like a nebulous dark side of the Force thing, where the main Star Wars, that's what it's supposed to be. It's, you know, it's supposed to take you to, as they say, a galaxy far, far away. But it shows that like evil is like inherent, like how you explained it, Jamie, where it's just like the person in positions of power abuse that power. It's not, oh, we have to embrace the dark side of the Force to be evil. Or like the different things in Andor where it's like people are, and we'll get into it into one of the other storylines, where it's just like, hey, yeah, we might destroy a planet because we have to harvest its stuff, but you know, it is what it is. But it's just kind of like the different things where you see people, they make exceptions to evil, where it does parallel, which I think is what Andor does such a great job of.
Yeah, and even going along with at least the first part, I think it's very intentional that it shows like the rebels being divided, because in terms of world history, like when it comes to rebellions, they typically all start off as very divided before being united under a common front. And then also it forms a very very apparent parallel to and contrast to how the Empire, they're on one accord about straight up genocide and murder, especially over some coffee and tea and crumpets. But we're not gonna get into that just yet until the, I don't even know if you want to tackle that storyline or the last storyline, but
that's a good point. Let's do that one last. That's what I want.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and real quick, just on this first half, I think kind of back to your first point, I think that, you know, the fact that there's disagreement within that one cell, I mean, I think disagreement within the one cell is more, a little more surprising, because we do know, again, from Rebels, from the first season of Andor, this rebellion in Star Wars started as a bunch of different cells, that basically there were different leaders who managed to pull all the cells together by the time we get to A New Hope, to where there is one rebellion. But again, from the first season of Andor, from all of our seasons of Rebels, we know that it didn't start that way. And so we kind of see some of that here, right? And I think that's where the who are you with, like they're trying to figure out like which cell, which group. Even in the first season, we have Saw Gerrera, who mentions a few different ones. We have Anton Krieger, who falls because he gets essentially left to die at Spellhouse. We have Maya Pei that gets also name dropped, and he kind of says different things. He's like, Anton Krieger's a separatist, Maya Pei's a new Republican. You have the Gorman front, which the Gorman seem to play a major role, or going to play a major role in the season potentially. And then you have like just all these different things that Saw Gerrera lists off. You have Saw Gerrera's faction. You have like, you know, we have Kanan and Ezra and those guys running around somewhere. You have all these different groups that like, separately, they've all decided this is wrong and we need to do something about it. They just haven't made it to the point where we're all united under one organized rebellion yet. But I think that also comes back to Luthen's whole argument in the first season, where as much as it sucks and it's going to hurt people, he wanted the Imperium to crack down more, because he's like, oppression breeds rebellion. And so when we have obvious oppression that's not just skirting under the rug anymore, when you feel the effects of oppression, that's when we'll all become a united rebellion. And so that's what Luthen wanted in the first season. And so I think we are seeing the effects of that as we start the second season.
It's really interesting that you mentioned oppression when there's a wedding going on. So, Meech, if you can be very high level with the wedding, and then if there's anything, well, there's multiple things towards
there
the
are
end.
So many layers.
We could dive in, but for the events, can you be very high level with it?
All right, here we go. All right, so now we're at the Mon Mothma storyline. So essentially, we're on her home planet, Chandrila. So her Mon and her husband, Perrine, is having their daughter's arranged marriage with the Scalder's son.
It was Lita? Was that?
Yeah, Lita and Skeleton. Stecken.
Stecken.
Yeah, Stecken. So if you remember, this was all part of the plot that Mon Mothma, like, there was 400,000 missing credits that Mon Mothma was using to fund the rebellion, and she needed the funds, you know, to be deposited back, or else folks would start, particularly the Empire, would start asking questions. And to do so, they end up going with her best friend, Takoma's associate, Davos Skulden, who agrees to give them the off the books funding in exchange for her giving her daughter, introducing her daughter to their son. So full on
I'm glad you mentioned that. I completely forgot why the wedding was happening. I'm glad you mentioned this.
Yes. So we got that in the end. Like, okay, so it's wedding. It's like the wedding days, because apparently the wedding takes like place over 3 days. So first part, you know, they're going around, like, she's like, Layla's looking at the wedding dress, and then Mon Mothma, she's greeting all the guests, but then she becomes very shocked that Luthen's up there. But Luthen, you know, he's still playing up his artisan role. But of course, and with Skulden, and you know, like, that's causing a little bit of tension. Of course, her cousin Belle is there, but she's not there with her girl. So what's up with that? You'll find out later. And all right, so what's happening is that, okay, so Takoma's like, he's going up to Mon Mothma. She's like, hey, I really need to talk with you about something, but she's like, all right, we'll talk later. And I'm just gonna cut to the chase. The real reason that they needed to talk is because of the fact that, hey, they did all of these things, but Takoma's like, firstly, he's on the outs with his wife. It looked like they separated. And Mon Mothma didn't even know about it, which means her ear is no longer on the ground to Chandrila, and instead to the rebellion. We're just gonna walk right.
I'm good
past
with you.
That.
Keep going, brothers.
All right, so we got that. So essentially, like, he's like, hey, all my business ventures are failing too, and hey, I know you guys are doing something shady, so hey, I may sell you out to the Empire unless I get some of that cheddar. And of course, we got Luthen and Clea, his assistant. She's basically like telling, like, hey, we're not getting much communications here. It's impossible for it to be hidden. And also, like, hey, Andor escaped, but we lost communication with him for a while. And Luthen's like, hey, keep going. It's like, all right, I'm going to be back on Coruscant to the shop in order to get the transmissions. So yeah, we got that. And then also Leda and Stecken had their first fight, which it's kind of crazy that they said first fight as if, like, you know, more to come.
I mean, fight. It's kind of crazy.
But
I don't know what to tell you.
Especially for arranged marriages. I mean,
I was mad. She was mad about him holding hands. She was like,
yeah, it's like, yeah. And that's like the reason I'm like, bro, if you don't get out,
y'all don't have a chance.
Y'all ain't making it. So, all right, next part, next episode. All right, so now Luthen, he's tapped into, like, to what's happening with Takoma, and he's like, hey, Mon, we need to figure out this price, and if not, like, I got peoples ready to take care of him, if you will, and then of course, like, Perrin, like her Mon Mothma's husband, he is very, very pissed because, like, because she thinks that Mon Mothma is having an affair with Tay due to, like, all their communications and whatnot. And the fact that also brilliant acting on Mon Mothma's part is the fact that she keeps having, like, a face of or a mask of, you know, like, cheerfulness and gentleness. But you can, like, see when things, like, irk at her, and you can see, like, the mask slip off for a few seconds before she puts it right back up. Good stuff. All right. So, yeah, she's accusing him. He's accusing her of having an affair, which she vehemently denies. And then there's a toast ceremony where essentially, like, he gave a speech like, oh, yeah, hey, the galaxy is going to crap on your heads at every single turn. But the most important thing in life is pleasure, gaiety, amusement, and joy, joy, joy.
That's so funny. It's kind of like what mentioned earlier about, like, the dichotomy of what's going on in the entire galaxy right now. And they're just like, you know, just enjoy life to the full, but not like the way we usually say it.
Yep. And then also, of course, Leia and Mon Mothma, they went up a mountain basically to get blessed by the priest to be purified for the wedding. And of course, as I said, Clay is back on Coruscant. And then next episode happens firstly, Mon Mothma, she's basically like confiding in her daughters, like during the last moments, like, hey, like my mom, she was a drunkard when it happened. When I got married, I want to pour my heart out to you. It's like, you don't have to go through with this, you know, which I'm like, oh, so you getting cold feet now.
Projecting.
Yeah, you getting cold feet now, but back when you needed that funding, you basically sold out your own daughter. But hey, that also goes to show, like, just her dedication to the cause, to where, like, she's basically trading her child for it. And also, turns out Tacoma, he ain't budging. He ain't budging at all. So Luthen got to do what Luthen got to do.
Well, they do say they're trying to set up a meeting, but like you said, Luthen is like, hey, yeah.
Luthen just doesn't want to wait.
Nah. And wait,
which is
absolutely
smart.
Wait, he absolutely does not, and is very smart, because Bell's girl, Terrell Senta, turns out she decided to infiltrate as Tacoma's new driver, and she takes him on a drive, if you will. The final drive of his life. So,
So do y'all think he's dead, or is he going to get re-educated?
Here's the thing. I think that the reason that Mon is dancing as aggressively as she is and is like, all right, let's just get drunk and dance at the wedding is...
Zara.
Well, it's multifactorial. What I do think... Okay, I think her encounter with her daughter before her daughter goes to actually do the wedding ceremony, I think it's a little bit more nuanced and complex than you've kind of led us to believe. Because, yeah, when Davos Golden initially in the first season was like, he's like, I don't want a betrothal, I just want an introduction. And we know that Leda, for whatever reason, was like super in love with these old Chandralin customs. So I think it's multifactorial, and that I think Leda does want this, but I think it's because Leda like wants the tradition and she wants to participate in like this whole, like, you know, arranged what is the custom of their people. Whereas Mon's having this guilt where she's like, oh my gosh, I've sold out my daughter for the rebellion. But I don't think Leda sees it that way. I think Leda sees it, and that's kind of why she's like, I wish you were drunk. Because she's like, why can't you just support me? Where Mon's like, oh, you've had this fight. Maybe this isn't, like, this isn't, and she's feeling guilt because of what she did. Even though Leda's like, no, this is, I think for Leda, it is what she wants, but like, she doesn't know better because she's 14. So it's just a whole really complex situation. But anyway, so I think that fight, plus the fact that Mon's realizing that, like, okay, when Luthen wants to deal with something, that basically means she's taking him out of the picture. So I think that she's fully expecting, yes, that, like, not only did she just have this big fight with her daughter, which they already have a rough relationship, but I think that plus the fact that she's like, okay, Luthen's gonna, like, kill Tacoma. I think that's fully what she has understood is happening. Now, is that what will actually happen? We'll see. I haven't known Senta to ever fail in her duty, because she's the one that's like the rebellion above all else and like doesn't really care about anything else that's going on. So if Luthen gives her a job, I'm pretty sure she's going to do the job. But anyway, yeah, that's what I understood, is that he's probably going to be dead at the end of that ride. So,
oh yeah, as I say, it's his final ride. And also, it also appears that Vel and Senta are on the outs. It also looks like they're on the outs. And then, as I said, Leda and Stekin, they're married now. And also, the Rakata, second mention. So, hey, KOTOR. KOTOR
there's
for
really,
life.
Okay, I'll wait until we do kind of like the... Well, okay. I guess while we're talking about it, there's just some really interesting things from this Chandrila storyline. First of all, I mentioned, I think the last time we did a review of Andor, that I really wanted to see, like, I was more curious about what are these Chandrilan customs? Like, so I'm really excited that we got to have these few episodes, because this is like exactly what I wanted out of the season. It's like, what is Chandrila? Like, what are these customs that they keep mentioning in the first season? I think they really fleshed that out a lot. Also, I have to say, the wardrobing, the costuming, on that note, this is some of the best wardrobing that we've gotten since Padme is Queen Amidala in episode one, and I am here for it. Fantastic. I saw that was really interesting. Erskine, Mon Mothma's personal assistant, we find out that he has a Chandrilan father, a Gorman mother, and he was born on Naboo. Now, some interesting things about that. One, it seemed to pique Luthen's interest when he mentioned he was born in Naboo, which goes back to our theory I think we mentioned last time that Luthen may or may not be from Naboo. But there's also like, and again, this is kind of a reach, but he's obviously older than 15 years old. And again, we mentioned 15 years old was how long ago that the Empire rose, Padme died, all those things, which means that he probably was born, I don't know, maybe around the time that Padme was Queen of Naboo. So that's just kind of a fun little fact that they would have all been running around on Naboo around the same time. But anywho, those were kind of my really interesting things from that storyline.
Okay, two things. So that final scene of Mon Mothma dancing was so freeing. Like, even just like watching it at home, I felt like I wanted to be there and dance with her. Yes.
Also, what's really interesting about that scene, though, the Niamos and that song, that's the planet that Cassian got captured on and sent to Narkeena 5 in the first season. So they say, like, when you go back and watch it, it says he's on Niamos, and the music, the introductory music that they use is exactly the same. So I don't know what connections we're drawing there, but like, I'm like, oh, that's interesting because it's the same. And then they say Niamos or whatever while they're dancing. So anyway, but yeah, that was a really cool, very artistic, I don't know, loved it. I love the artisticness of the whole wedding ceremony. Her dress was gorgeous. Again, I don't want to sidebar us too far because time, but yep. Anywho.
All right, so number two, there was a big trade in the NFL draft, so we will be speeding this along. So for the half plot one, we have the IBS, right?
Yep.
That's it.
Not irritable bowel syndrome.
All right, so with them, we have they get called in by Director Krennic, correct? Yep. Right, that's his name. Okay, Director Krennic. So he gives a this reminded me of every like generic kind of like group team meeting or board meeting that they be having in TV shows. Exactly, Meech. So we will be speeding along. So with that, he kind of talks about the importance of Gorman. With that, He mentions it as energy. Is that's what it is, correct? Like, they wanted the energy from the planet?
No, they're going to mine a mineral, essentially. Yeah, they're going to mine it from... honestly, you can think of, like, rare metal mining, how we have, like, mining cobalt or something. Think of it sort of the equivalent of that is essentially what they want to do. But they want to do it to the extent that they would need so much of it that the planet would then become stable and collapse. So...
But because he was mentioning, because the presentation he presented was not very, it was like a timeshare.
It was very 1950s. Yes, that was... Like, it was interesting.
Documentary. Does that mineral provide energy? Because he said it a lot. So
He said it was supposed to coat the reactors. So I think it's a protective and stabilizing element. I don't think it's for energy, but it's like part of what you need to construct a successfully functioning. And honestly, I don't think it's for energy. I think it's for the Death Star. Personally,
100% for the Death Star
he's talking about, because we know that that's a project that he's working on actively. So anyway, I think it's supposed to be like a stabilizing or protective element to help the laser beam that's going to then destroy planets function on the Death Star.
And as mentioned in the previous season, we saw that when Cassian went to jail, they were building parts for the Death Star with that. So that's one of the main plot points for that. We also learned that the Gormans, they're more important than just like a simple like country folk that you can just kind of walk over. And then, you know, they also can't leave. Well, will most likely not want to leave their planet. So that's kind of like a very important plot point. It seems that Dedra is going to be assigned that task. It really gets confirmed in episode 2 after she has a conversation with Director Krennic. So that's kind of like the main apart from the episode one. Going into episode two, it's real quick. We just kind of have her conversation with her boss, kind of like, oh, I don't want Gorman. And it's like, hey, it's not technically, it's not a punishment. Just show them that you can, you know, be successful, be competent. This whole Cassian Andor thing kind of like ruined your reputation. Just be successful with Gorman. And then we also
I do think it's really interesting to note that the reason that she gets the job is because her plan is you need Gorman rebels you can count on to do the wrong thing.
Yep.
And I think, again, Star Wars is political. There's a lot of real world politics happening in this storyline here, especially with how they're looking at mining resources from this group of people and then talking about resettling them or essentially just letting the planet collapse and letting them all die. Take from that what you will, but that's what we're actually dealing with right now.
Yeah, and also because of that, it's also setting up the Gorman incident in Rebels.
Nice. Okay, so with that, we have the return of our least favorite self-important Bureau of Standards officer, Cyril. But we then see that Bix and Cyril have, they're in a relationship.
Deidre is...
My bad. Deidre and Cyril have a relationship, which I will cover in episode three, which we're getting into now. So with that, kind of at the tease of episode two, it's kind of like, hey, let's put it off. No, let's not put it off. They kind of have that conversation. And I'm like, oh, since they're in a relationship, might be the toxic mom. So getting into episode three, we have the meeting of the mom, which was, whoo-wee. If you've met parents of a significant other, it hasn't been like that.
Listen, I've felt this one personally. I'm not even going to lie.
So with that, you just kind of see the stressful scene of it. You see how Cyril has been damaged by his mother, like every incel in some capacities. But with that, then he kind of like, he rushes away, kind of a big baby. He's on the bed, you know, throwing a temper tantrum in a sense. But Deidre, this is what I texted you, Meech, about Simp City might be back. I'm getting Lazelle vibes.
No, sir.
Stop. Okay, I'm gonna pause Meech's reaction here so he can just lose his mind over that. I don't know what that means, but since you brought this up, I just have two thoughts on this relationship. One, I hate that this is the way that they did it because he literally was actively stalking her in the last season. And so I really actually hate that this is the storyline we're taking, that they're now in a relationship, because that's just incredibly toxic city. But again, this is the Empire, so maybe they're all just evil people. I don't know if you believe that that's a thing. But anyway, so one, I hate that they're together. But that being said, Deidre's a rock star in this episode because, like, that is absolutely what every supportive partner should be doing, to set strong boundaries with your partner's toxic family. Yes. Like, we all need somebody who's going to fight for us and step up to bat for us the way that Deidre does for Cyril, even though he does not deserve it whatsoever in this storyline.
Yes.
Anyway, and thank goodness somebody finally put this mom in her place. And also, yeah. You know what, Deidre? You're a rock star. I don't like that you're on the wrong side of the story, but you're a rock star. I'll give that to you. Those are my only thoughts on that.
Yes, so she has a new nickname, Dom Deidre, which I will be calling her through these reactions. I realize I have a problem these past two months.
Oh, no.
You do. You really do. I'm scared for you, bro.
But that's her storyline. I mean, those are like the main plot points. She's going to let Cyril off his leash twice a month to see his mother, because she's obviously the dom in that relationship. So with that, we are going to get into our MVP or op of the week. My MVP of the week.
Wait, hang on. Just on the Gorman note, because Gorman is now going to take a real big center stage here.
We can
this
do
is
that in
weird...
big picture, if you want. Huh? We can do that in the big picture of predictions.
Okay.
All right. So my MVP of the week is Bix for handling business, showing homeboy that it was hammer time, and protecting herself. And like you said, Jamie, not needing someone to save her. And then my op of the week is Imperial bureaucracy and the IRS that was doing their census.
IRS? Don't you mean IBS, sir?
ISB? Why are we...
No, I'm talking about the people.
I mean, they could have IBS, but
I'm talking about the people that were doing the inspections. I know they're not the IRS, but you know, it's that season.
The Imperial.
They're Imperials. We can, yeah.
Call them the ops. All right. All right. So biggest op of the week goes to our big boy Kroll. for what he attempted to do to our girl Bix. She ain't been through enough already, especially after what Gorse did to her. But she also gets the MVP for being able to fight back and get a couple dubs, couple bodies.
I don't even know how to assign answers for this prompt here. I mean, part of me wants to give Luthen, I want to give Luthen the MVP just because he's just got so many fingers and so many different pies here. Like, he ends up there and then he brings this like Shandy Merle. We kind of skipped over the whole Shandy Merle storyline about how like they got stolen. He brings it back. And honestly, I don't know if you felt this, Meech. I kind of feel like the Shandy Merles look eerily similar to the Whims a little bit in a way. And so I'm wondering if there's like a, which, you know, it would kind of make sense if there was some kind of connection in all of like the different, like across the Star Wars universe that the Whims would show up. But that would be really interesting if there was a connection. Anyway, like, I don't know, Luthen procures this really interesting like cultural artifact for them. Obviously, he's still the one steering this whole operation. We see that he's still very much in the thing. I don't know. Cassian's obviously like in line with sort of what he's doing. I don't know. It's just so hard to, at this stage, pick an MVP. The op is obviously still going to be the Empire forever. I mean, I think I would probably have to give the op of the week to Krennic, maybe, just because, like, again, he's sort of, at this point, he's the top of the Imperial nonsense. Just because, like, again, we know that he's working on building the Death Star. He's willing to sacrifice an entire planet of people to get the resource that he wants. That's pretty disgusting. And so I think I'm going to give that the op of the week. And he's going to enlist Dedra and her efficiency to get it done, shall we say. So, yeah, I don't love that, but, you know, here we are. But, yeah, I don't have a clear MVP, I don't think.
That's fair. It's very early, so that's why I threw in the op. So for the next segment, we have our big questions of the week. They don't always necessarily have to relate to the show. For mine, it would kind of lead into where you were going, Jamie. But my big question was, what is the importance of Gorman? And maybe it could be potentially spoilery, so just consider that if either of you two have an answer.
Well, I don't necessarily have an answer. It's just, I think that the Gorman arc specifically makes a lot of what Mon Mothma's doing in the first season more relevant, because there's multiple instances. Like, there's the dinner that Perrin has with all of his friends or whatever, where Mon Mothma kind of drops a little tidbit like, oh, this person that you love and think is so interesting, they just cut off the shipping lanes to Gorman. Do you think that our Gorman friends like think that that's funny? And then she's giving a speech in the Senate about how like the new policy or whatever is, I think she literally says, a boot to the neck of all Gormans or whatever. So like, Gorman is something that like Mon Mothma is actively being an ally for these people throughout the whole first season. And so it's interesting that like that seems to suddenly be a bigger storyline. And I think that's where we're also going to see Mon Mothma is going to come under a lot more fire potentially for her stance on things with the Empire. So yeah, that was kind of the interesting tie in to how she's going to maybe become much more relevant in this season.
Honestly, my big question is, how much more is Mon Mothma willing to give in to sustain the rebellion? What more is she willing to lose? Will it be her husband? Will it be more?
Well, she clearly gave up her friend, or, well, I guess technically that was behind her back, but yeah.
Here's the thing. We don't see any of them outside of this show, so maybe she just becomes isolated from them. I don't know. But, and I think that being said, I think some of my big questions are, so we see Yavin 4. Like, Yavin 4 is on the scene. I don't think that it's a rebel base yet. Now, the fact that Cassian just kind of left the band of imbeciles on Yavin 4 with a busted ship and no pilot, I think that means that either, obviously, we know that we're going to have to return to this planet to build the rebel base that is possibly under threat from the Death Star at the end of A New Hope. So I guess my question with that is, at what point is this going to become the major rebel base? Are we going to have to go back and deal with those guys first, or are all those creatures going to kill them first before we get there? And then, you know, what's that process going to be? How is all this going to take shape? Because again, we are still 4 years out from all the events of Rogue One, and that's supposed to kind of bridge the gap here. So I'm curious when all that's going to take shape. And then, you know, I did have another big question. And it's kind of eluding me at the moment, but that is kind of one of the big ones of like, yeah, Yavin 4, we know that it's here now. We know that that's where our base is going to be, but how is that all going to take shape? How are these rebel cells going to go? Oh, I think maybe another big question too is because, again, we know this is sort of side by side paralleling rebels events. Are we going to see any crossovers with rebels? Because we know that they do all have to come together. And we know that Hera is on scene for Rogue One because sure, her name is dropped like at the base. So like, again, are we going to start seeing maybe some of those characters filter in towards the end of the show? How's that all going to play out?
And also, I just had one more thing to pretty much put in is the fact like I had to look it up because I was like, I know it was mentioned in Rebels. And basically, like literally the episode that Mon Mothma appears in with Star Wars Rebels is basically about her calling out the Emperor for the Gorman massacre.
Mm.
So we about to see what happens to Gorman in this season. It's about to be bloody.
Oh, I think that was my other question. We know that everyone dies at the end of Rogue One, and we know that there's a lot of characters from Andor that we don't see crossing over into Rogue One. So I guess that's my other big question is how many of these characters are gonna die? And how are they going to die in the process of this rebellion finally taking shape? Because we know that if there's anything that Andor does consistently, it's show us what is the boots on the ground, what is the grassroots, what is the common people experience of this rebellion. And so I think we are going to see some of the bigger costs of what it takes to mount a rebellion against such great power.
I think kind of with that, even like what we saw at the end of episode 3, my feeling on the show is like, if you weren't seen in Rogue One, or you're not mentioned in like later products, you don't make it. It's like, or at least nobody's safe with that. So we can kind of get into predictions for next week and then the big picture view. Since they released 3 episodes and it kind of like was one, like each arc kind of concluded as they move on to the next one, it's kind of hard to have predictions for next week. I think we start to get more into like what's going to happen with Gorman. I'm not sure where Andor and the crew are going now. I think we're going to see also a lot of time jumps. Since, as you mentioned, Jamie, I didn't know it was 4 years away. So I think we're going to see a lot of time jumps between chapters with that. And then the big picture view, Luthen isn't in Rogue One, right?
Nope.
I think Luthen dies by explosion to save something. So let's clip that. All right, what do you two have for predictions or big picture view?
As I'm not sure about like next week due to like the batches, But yeah, so throughout this entire timeline, we're going to start seeing more of the, I guess, more of like the underside, as you mentioned, like the underside of the rebellion. And so you're seeing all of, like, we kind of got a tease of it with the bumbling idiots, but we're going to see like more, I'm thinking like we're probably going to see like more independent cells of the rebellion that either Cassian, Luthen, or even Mon Mothma or even Bail Organa, who knows, just like slowly bring all these people together under one like national front, which I think is actually what happened during the Gorman massacre or like right after it. Dang. But either way, as I said, probably going to see the Gorman massacre because that takes place 2 years before. So 2 years like right after this. So it's going to take at least 2 years before we get to a whole massacre of the people. Curious as to see like if Daedra's going to actually like devote her full time to this or continue on her Axis mission, or she's gonna like wait, hold on, what if both these things start become intertwined and like the plot point is going to resolve itself with a very cathartic death, if you will.
Don't do that to my girl Daedra.
Yeah, I think as far as predictions, the one thing I keep thinking of is I don't know what the specific relationship of Cassian and Bix is right now, but we know that by the time we get to Rogue One, he's unattached and does end up attached to, why can I not?
Jan?
Yeah, I'm like Felicity Jones, isn't it? I'm like, that's not her name in the show. Yeah, he ends up attached to Jyn Erso, like by that time that we're like, you know, part of the way through the story. So if he and Biggs are attached in some way currently, she's going to be out of the picture by the time that we get there. So I guess I'm curious how that's going to all play out. I'm curious where they're going to go next, because obviously they had to kind of just dip and run. So they're on the run from the Empire again. So like, where are we going to see them kind of jump to? Kind of tracing, because we know that Cassian has this whole thing about, oh, I've been in this fight for however many years or whatever. So we're just kind of following his storyline. But yeah, it's hard to say. I do think we're going to see Mon Mothma take a much more prominent role, though, in this season, because I think, again, we know that she's one of the main leaders of the rebellion by the time we get to Rogue One, by the time we get to the end of Rebels, by the time we get to the actual original trilogy, because she sort of steps into that role that's vacated by Padme when, unfortunately, she rests in peace. I think we're going to start to see, well, I think we're going to see a lot of corrupt politics, because Star Wars is really, really good at showing the corruption of politics, especially with imperialism and fascism and things like that. So I think we're going to see her having to navigate some really complex storylines and see her really take a big role in this season. Other than that, it's hard to kind of make significant predictions, other than hopefully by the end of this, we do actually see how the rebellion comes together.
All right. And, any final thoughts? Yeah.
Yep. Because my mind, it literally jumped to a major thing. So we all know Luthen's speech from season one, just that amazing speech.
Yes.
But one thing it just literally clicked into my mind is like how Cassian is slowly starting to morph into like that ideology over the course of the episodes. And with that, what if like at the end of this comes a moment where he has to choose between saving Bix or completing the mission?
That's going to be tough. We also saw that Bix is still traumatized from what happened to her. So that's going to be interesting. All right. My only other question, do you think we see Jen's dad at all? I know Mads Mikkelsen is a big actor.
Okay.
So.
I had that thought when Krennic showed up, but I don't think so, because he doesn't get pulled back into it until Rogue One. And so I think like that was kind of my thought with this, for like, he's been out for a while now, because we know that he got out when Jin was little. And so if Jin and Cassian are around the same age, Galen's been out for a while, so he's hiding on some planet somewhere. Now, we do know that they had ties to Saw Gerrera. So I guess in the context of maybe we see that relationship take form, that's possible. But I don't see Galen Erso showing up. He might be name dropped, but I don't see him actually showing up on the show.
Yes. All right. So with that, we are going to wrap up. Definitely happy to have you on, Jamie, as usual. We'll definitely have you on for the finale as well, hopefully. Andor just keeps cooking. So with that, a little bit more housekeeping, just as a recap, we are going to be doing weekly recaps of Andor season 2, at least in 3-episode blocks if they are dropping it in chapters, as I mentioned. We're going to do, again, mid-season and then the finale of The Last of Us. Oh my lord. And then we are coming back fully for the Thunderbolts. So, Meech, can you hit us with the plug, sign off, so we can get to this NFL draft?
Yep. All right. So, for our Instagram, X formerly known as Twitter, and Threads, we're on the BlurCity22. Like, comment, subscribe. Yeah, you already know all the information. All right. So, we got our YouTube and Patreon, Blurred City Pod. You know what to do with the Patreon. Donate a little bit of cheddar. Come on, love us. We got ourselves a Discord linked in the Instagram page. You already know what to do. Go ahead, click that for us. We have our email address, blurcity22@gmail.com. You know, submit episode suggestions, geek out, freak outs, your thoughts on Andor and whatever shows we are covering, or what's a show that you would like for us to cover. Go ahead, send us all that, and you already know what happens to hate mail. All right, I am also the Jedi Bono Mustafar on Instagram, TikTok, however long we got all of those. Yeah, that's me. Keep it going.
All right, so for my individual author pages, we have my Instagram, that is Mitri_Dash. For my X/Twitter, that is @TheMadDash16. And if you're interested in my book, Phantom Reckoning, A Most Regular Tale, that is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kindle. Jamie, what do you got?
I suppose if you really want to find me, you've heard this before, because this is the same as previously, but you can find me on Instagram, JAYSCACH. It's pretty easy. There's not much. Mostly it's travel pictures at this point, but yeah. And I think otherwise, I think we usually have some kind of words of wisdom sign off thing. So I guess that's the only other thought I have. I just think there's some really great quotes from this show. One of them from the first episode is from Cassian to Nia, as he's reassuring her that this is the right decision. And he says, you'll never feel right unless you're doing what you can to stop them. And I think that we should all take that energy into our present situations that we're in or wherever it's applicable.
All right. So as we usually say, it's not goodbye forever. It's just goodbye for now. And that's the Blurb City Podcast.
See y'all later.